Good evening. Thank you, Rabbi Wolf, for the introductory words, and thank you for inviting me out, both Gesher and the Gateways, for giving the opportunity to share with you on the topic of the challenge of jealousy. There was once a gentleman in England who owned a Mini Miner. It's a car that's very small, it's smaller than your Uno and Fiat. In fact, they just announced now that they're going out of production. The Mini Miner is so small that if you stretch your legs in the front seat, you're going to go through the front of the car into the engine. You cannot imagine how small it is. I don't know if anyone in England has seen what size of the Mini Miner is. So his neighbor has a Rolls Royce. And our friend with the Mini Miner goes over to his neighbor with the Rolls and says, "You know what, I think you should come and see what I've just installed in my car." So he goes over and he sees inside this Mini, there's a coffee making machine. So the man with the Rolls is like, bright red, I cannot believe this. And it makes a beautiful cup of coffee, fresh, roasted on the spot. 2 days later, having taken the Rolls into the workshop, he calls over his neighbor who owns the Mini. He says, "Come, I want you to see what I have in my Rolls." He's installed a coffee making machine and a fruit machine that does 5 different fruits. And the guy with the Mini says, "You know what? It's very nice, I'm happy for you. Did you see what I just did to my car?" "No." He says, "Let me show you." He comes out, and inside this Mini has been installed a swimming pool. The man with the Rolls is going nuts. "How could you do this?" He goes, has his Rolls taken into the shop, stretched, and they install a swimming pool, but much bigger than the Mini. So he goes over to his friend in the Mini, knocks on the door. No one says, knocking on the window. Doesn't open the door. He bangs on the window, sees all the fog and steam on the inside. The window rolls down. It says, "I think you should come and see my Rolls. I put in an Olympic-sized swimming pool." So the guy in the Mini says, "You called me out of my jacuzzi just to tell me that?" We're going to discuss tonight, what is the mechanics of jealousy that allows me to feel that if I had what you own, whether it's possessions, if I had your looks, that outer image, if I had your figure, if I were to have your relationships, or your popularity, or the position you hold in society, or if only I had that person's position in the corporate world, I would feel so much happier in my own self. Is it possible that jealousy is one of the root causes for many ills, emotionally and beyond? In fact, when we ask the question more seriously, it becomes a wonder that in the top 10 commandments, the Decalogue, God put, "Don't be jealous," number 10. How did it get there? I mean, let's look at it for a moment. If you were to rate anger on a scale of 0 to 10 in terms of its negative consequences, What would you give it? 10. If you were to rate arrogance on a scale of 0 to 10, what would you give it? In terms of its negativity, what it leads to in relationships, 10. No one broke the scale, 20, 30. What would you rate defamation? Destruction of another person's name and reputation. This is terrible. How about hatred? What would you give hatred as a rating? These are really serious crimes. How did jealousy win against hatred? Defamation? How did it win against flattery? Arrogance? I mean, if you make a long list. Anger? Anger is so destructive. How does jealousy win against all those? It got to the top 10. What's it doing there? It's interesting that the Mishnah Berurah, the famous Chofetz Chaim, in his halachic work, in his legal code, right at the very beginning, it's really the second sub-paragraph of Biur Halacha, that's one of the smaller commentaries to the Code of Jewish Law, he quotes the Sefer Chinuch, which is a book about educating ourselves in the instructions of God. And he describes there the list of 6 of the 613 mitzvahs, 6 of the 613 instructions in the Torah which apply every waking moment of our lives. And number six is Loi Taturu Acharei Levavchem VeAcharei Nechem, which I'm going to translate. You can look it up. It's right at the last paragraph of our Kriyat Shema of the Shema Yisrael. I think it's in Numbers chapter 15. But I will translate it as Loi Taturu. Do not believe what your eyes or your mind tell you. So who am I supposed to trust if I can't trust what my eyes tell me and what my mind interprets what my eyes say, what my eyes see? And the answer is, a Jew is expected to learn incrementally, a little bit every day, Torah to the point that their mind is able to discern between right and wrong, good and bad. I cannot believe everything I see, especially in the world of the media. I cannot believe everything I see in the corporate world. I cannot believe everything I see in... If you had told me, I would have... I cannot believe everything I see in relationships, because on the surface, there's one image. But intimacy, it's a nice word in English, into me see. Intimacy means seeing into me and seeing into you. Seeing into me to know my limits and my strengths. Seeing into you to understand your needs and how to share. Loi Taturu means do not believe one's eyes. Because I could easily think that someone else's success is my downfall, or someone else's possessions is my barometer for if I had that, I would be happy. We're told there are two levels of jealousy. One is called ta'ava, desire, and one is called hemda, which I don't know if there's a real distinction in the way you would translate the two in English. One would be a desire, one would be a craving. But the way it translates in Hebrew is that hemda is a different level to regular jealousy. Hemda means that I want it so much, I plan how to get what you've got. And I don't mean to get the same credit line or the same car. I mean your car, your money, your home, your wife, your possessions. That hemda, that is a worse level, so to speak, than taiva, which is a desire. But both are separate violations, and they grow from the seed of jealousy. Where does jealousy begin? What is the genesis? And then let's look at the mechanics. The genesis of jealousy are my eyes. My eyes tell me, I like the way you look, I like your body, or I like what you own, I like the position you hold in society, I like your popularity, I like the friends that are attracted to you, I like the way you wear your clothes. Whatever it is I like, I now have a decision of how to interpret what my eyes have reported to my mind. Loi Taturu Acharei one's eyes, don't follow one's eyes, is the first root of jealousy. The second point is what my mind does with that information. To the extent that I either desire what you actually have, or I desire to have the same as what you have, that thought already is one which is alien. It's one that is poisonous. It is one that makes me believe the assumption that what I have now is not enough. What's in my life now is not as good as what someone else has. The career I presently have, the marriage I presently have, the friendships I presently have, the clothes, the figure, whatever it is, I have to watch out that what I listen to in my mind, based on what my eyes report, is not a simple, shallow image. I have to discern if I'm noticing that I want what you have, and that there's an assumption I'll be happier were I to have it. That's poison. That's the beginning of self-destruction. We're told that jealousy leads to hatred, resentment. It can lead to anger. Jealousy is the beginning of many ills which translate into action. Because my anger, my resentment, my feeling of inadequacy, that when you have more, I feel that I'm less, or if you have a better mind, a more analytical mind, you're brilliant, or you have an incredible IQ, or I admire you for your PhD, or for your the letters behind your name, I'm saying to myself that I feel inferior because someone else has higher qualifications. Or I'm jealous of someone's job, or status, or beautiful spouse. All this, if uncontrolled by my eyes or by my mind, becomes the beginning of planting the seed of resentment, bitterness with what I have, it's not enough, unhappiness, and then God forbid, if that translates into actions, I will start speaking ill of the other person, and perhaps even being joyful if, God forbid, they lose what they have. And then I may not be aware that I could be spending thousands of dollars to buy a different model car which has many extras way beyond the essential function of what the car was designed as a comfortable and safe mode of transportation. I will pay many thousands of dollars for the extras or for the name or the model, and not realizing that that result, that thousands of hours possibly of work that's part of my life that I gave away in order to be able to afford the extra level of luxury, comes from not being in control of the thoughts that are planting the seeds of jealousy that becomes my barometer of what I will measure in my life as, look, I've arrived. I never forget once reading, I think it was in a Sotheby's or Christie's magazine, I think it was a Sotheby's magazine, a painting that had on white canvas a red line in the shape of an L and a black dot in the middle. And it went for $5 million. Now, I'm not a good painter, but and my 5-year-old daughter, I think, could do it better. What? How do you pay $5 million? And the answer is, unless someone can educate me as to how that really is a work of art, the answer is, I mean, some people will actually read into it, deep therapeutic solutions, I don't know, but what I will share with you is the following. The answer is that if I can put a painting on my wall which has a red L and a black dot in the middle and it cost me $5 million, I'm quantifying my wealth in public or to whoever sees it. Wait a minute. You mean, oh my gosh, if this guy can afford to put a stupid L and a black dot for $5 million on his wall, guess what he must be really worth? It's just an illusion. It's just an illusion. My attempt to somehow put out, this is what I am. But I'm not my picture. And I'm not my car. I'm not even the shape of my body. And I'm not even the image on my face. My face is just a facade. In Hebrew, panim means outside. Panim means inside. The panim is the inside and panim is the outside. Panim as a face is only a reflection of what's inside, a reflection, but not necessarily what's real. So my smile indicates to you he probably feels happy inside. But if I had to open up and share with you my personal challenges, the weaknesses that I have not overcome and that I'm consistently falling into, you would see why on the inside I may not feel fulfilled or happy. So I cannot even say that my body or my face, my clothes, my social status, my career, my bank account is who I am. So who am I? Certainly, our emotions are getting closer to it, but am I my anger? Am I my compassion? Is that who I am? Is that part of me? Let's ask ourselves. You see someone go out in his new Porsche. He spent years putting money aside to afford this new Porsche. And he gets to the freeway, the last light, and he gets to a red light, and someone comes up and bangs right into him. What's your emotion in that moment? You're the driver, you've spent years saving up for this gorgeous Porsche. What's the first emotion?
Anger.
Anger! I'm going to kill the guy! I can't believe it! Right? Now the second emotion might be, wait a minute, I'm alive! Thank God! So it's possible that I might realize, you know, having such a big bang into my car, I also realized that I'm happy that I'm still alive. So I could actually feel an emotion of gratitude that, thank God, I'm still alive. But as soon as I realize, you know what, but I'm also very angry. I'm like, pulverize the guy. And you get out. And now I've experienced two very extreme emotions. On the one hand, I feel very grateful I'm alive, but I want to kill the man. I'm so mad at him. You can actually see the smoke coming out my ears. And just as I pull open the door, he falls out onto the floor into a pool of blood. And suddenly, a deep compassion, immediate need to save this man's life, takes over. So what happened? In the space of possibly 10, 15, 20 seconds, anger, gratitude and happiness and amazing deep compassion in extremes all were present almost simultaneously. Am I my emotions? So let's go up a level. If I'm not what I own, and I'm not the career, and I'm not the letters behind my name, I'm not even who is in my life, and I'm not my body, and I'm not the shape of my body, and I'm not my clothes, and I'm not what's on the outside, and I'm not even my emotions. In fact, we even say, you know, I'm angry, or I feel anger now, so there's an I, and there's an anger. But it's not the same, we hope. I feel compassion, I feel appreciation, I feel love, but there's an I that is expressing that. So we know that the emotion is not who I am. When I say I'm tired, well, it's my body really that's tired. It could be that my mind is also a little bit tired, but usually when we say, you know, I'm tired, we're referring to the body is exhausted. But the mind could possibly go on. So we get to the mind. The mind is getting closer to it. And part of the mind are all the sum total of thoughts, experiences that are part of my brain, part of my memories. But let's ask ourselves, are we our thoughts? How many times do we catch ourselves? I'm in the middle of listening to a lecture. It's kind of interesting. I'm not sure if it's really my subject. And my brain is wondering as to, you know, maybe I should have watched the results tonight. And I'm thinking about, and then suddenly my mind goes back to the lecture, and there's a voice. Can you hear that voice saying, stay focused with the lecture, or not stay, just listen to your spouse right now, listen to your date, because, you know, stop wondering. Do you notice that the mind almost has a mind telling it and reminding it what to do? Interesting. There's a thought that says get back on focus, whether it's the project at work, whether it's getting off the phone call, because this is a social phone call right now and I'm taking too much time out of my pressed already schedule, or sometimes I've got to get back onto the call because my mind is involved in where it shouldn't be. Interesting that our thoughts have some sort of mind outside of them reminding them where to be, where to focus. Rabbeinu Tam, one of the Baalei Tosafot, has in one of his Sfarim, Sefer Yashar, a description that there is a das shubadas, that there's a mind that's in the mind. That mind, behind the mind, is the neshama, is the soul. There is a soul, and that's the real me. Being aware that I'm not my thoughts means that when I have a thought to be jealous of a person or their possessions, their looks, their image, their corporate position, their salary, their family, their home, their car, their lifestyle. I have a choice once I'm aware that those thoughts are responses to what my eyes report. I have a choice to take control of that thought, as I have a choice to take control of all the emotions that I express, whether it's anger, happiness, compassion, love, sympathy, empathy. And there's a long list now being coined as the emotional IQ. Noticing the thoughts that I want to entertain is being in control. And choosing the thoughts that I want to have is still a higher level of control. How to respond to anger, how to control anger, assumes that I'm being in control at some level. Jealousy, taking control of jealousy, is one of the root causes that the spillover on the positive side of it is that it becomes a training in not believing that if I had what you have, then I would be happy. It's a training in appreciation of what already is good in me, first, and in my life outside of me. What I've accomplished for myself, and I'm not referring to the courses I've taken, what we've accomplished in ourselves in terms of what we've conquered in ourselves, as our sages tell us, who is a really powerful person? Eizehu Gibur. Who is a powerful person? Hakoivesh et Yitzro. The one who conquers his own self, is in control of his own self. He could be a person of tremendous influence in the world, even contribution. A person that perhaps even controls influence because of his leadership position in politics, in the community, or even in the family. But if he's not in control of his own ta'avot, cravings for what other people have, his own cravings, own jealousies, is he really in control? Or do his cravings control him? And therefore, it's not what we call power. On the outside, it looks like it's power. But God actually takes over the situation that when someone reaches a point of tremendous influence over other people, a new equation enters. And that equation is, God does not allow that person to impact them unless it's the sum total of their needs and what they deserve. And therefore, we're told, the generation gets the leadership they deserve. And maybe that's why we find ourselves so lost for leadership on so many levels. In the family, extended family, in the community sometimes we feel that way, and sometimes in the nation in which we live. But it's a result of where myself as an individual, I'm not in control in my own life. And therefore, I don't have the zechut, the merit, to necessarily receive the direction that I really need. So comes along this mitzvah, this instruction, that being in control of our minds, in being aware that I have jealousy, and it's not right or wrong, I'm going to share with you in a few moments how even though we perhaps initially assume that jealousy is negative, actually there really are two parts to it. As with almost all other midot, in Hebrew, personality traits means midot, which literally translates as measures, because every character trait is a measure. It's not right and it's not wrong. It depends on the measure that's being used in the context in which it's used. Jealousy has a positive side to it, and we're going to look at it in a few moments. But it's easy for me to realize that jealousy is one of the root causes of resentment and anger, frustration and unhappiness. In fact, if you ask yourselves, what is every commercial, whether it's a still photo in a magazine or an advertisement on television, what does every single commercial assume? No matter what the text, no matter what it's selling, it assumes that I, the consumer, watching this commercial, looking at this text, at this magazine picture, I can't possibly be happy, totally fulfilled, enjoying everything that I have in my life until I'm drinking this product, eating this way, dieting that, driving this, smoking that, living this lifestyle here, vacating over there. So the whole media is based on serving into the trait of jealousy that says, if I had more of this, then I would be happier, more fulfilled, I would have more pleasure, I would have greater experience of self-fulfillment. And yet, we know that the only real fulfillment is in conquering our own weaknesses, being strong for ourselves, because those who are in real positions of leadership, internally and externally, why are they able to make a contribution on a different level? Because they're giving to whom first? Themselves. The analogy given to us of the Vilna Gaon, one of the greatest minds in Jewish scholarship, he shares the analogy that if a person had a cup of water and shared it with others, there's a limit to how much I'm able to share, because the cup has a capacity by definition. So if a person wanted to share water with a lot of people, what would be the right direction to go in order to be able to give a lot of water without having to go without for oneself? And he gives a simple analogy that if I share a drop with you and a drop with you and a drop with you, eventually I may have given to others, but if I'm not giving to myself, I will run out, I will burn out, and I may even end up resenting those who got so much from me, especially if I feel that they weren't even appreciative that I bust my tail to give them that water of life, whether it was emotional support, financial support, being there for them. Says the Vilna Gaon, if I really want to share, fill the cup with water and carry on filling it. And then whatever spills over is whatever everyone else will have. As much as we put in is as much as what will spill out and be for others. So if we're going to talk about taking control of our thoughts, especially becoming aware of how deeply jealousy sometimes motivates and sometimes eats us up, becoming aware that there are thoughts there that I'm allowing to be entertained because of what my eyes have reported, and how my thoughts then say, yes, that would make me happier, I would feel more fulfilled if only I went for that degree. And you know what? If I had a PhD, that would make all the difference. You know what? When I get out of high school, you have no idea, I'm going to be so happy. You know, remember that experience? And when I get my first job, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I get out of this job, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I get my first relationship, I'm going to be. When I get out of this relationship, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I get married, I'm going to be so happy. When I get out of this marriage, I'm going to be so happy. You know, when I have kids, I'll be so happy. When I get the kids out of the house, I'll be so happy. One second. If my happiness or fulfillment is outside, what controls my happiness? If happiness isn't noticing what's already in my life and capitalizing on that, no matter how much more is outside that becomes part of my life, if it's not inside me and I'm not enjoying what's already there, nothing out there is going to do it for me. So comes along the mitzvah of jealousy. It's number 10 in the Decalogue, in the Ten Commandments, because it's a major mitzvah to practice being aware of the thoughts that are being planned in my mind, and that awareness, the soul, so to speak, taking control of the thoughts and the emotions. And then the results of that, how I speak, how I think, and then how I act. Many times in childhood, a person feels, my sister, my brother had much more than I did. My father, he gave so much more to my brother than me. If I had the love that my brother had, I would have turned out okay. If my dad gave me half of what my sister had, I would be a different woman. I would be more affectionate. I don't mean to make fun, Chas v'Shalom, but I'm just bringing out how... No, seriously, in childhood, these thoughts of noticing where people are getting more of something, whether it's attention or toys. You know, it's amazing, and sometimes I've actually seen this happen. You ask each child individually how they feel about how they're treated by mom and dad, and their answer is, each sibling in the same family says, my mom and dad love the others more than me. And each one actually says the same thing. How do the parents pull that off? Jealousy in childhood can easily become a spillover later on, that since I'm used to seeing, and if it was true, that my mother, father gave more attention, or time, or even spoilt other siblings more than me, is it possible that being trained in that way by default means that I arrive into adulthood almost expecting to be treated that way, and that unless I take control of that thought and not feel resentment for anyone who is perhaps doing better than me in my department, or better than me in my grades in school, or in my career? Is it possible that I could eat myself up with jealousy? In fact, the Torah does not apologize for admitting openly that our patriarch, Jacob, made a mistake in giving more love to Joseph than the other brothers. Favoritism. But wait a minute, let me ask you. How is a person supposed to be real to themselves if they've got X number of kids, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12 kids, and this one, for whatever reason, whether it's an emotional or rational, it can be explained, you connect and you have an affinity with that child more than the others. So I'm not supposed to be real to that feeling? And the answer is, don't deny the reality. That's who I am. If I have that love towards Joseph more than the other brothers, goes on to hate. Be healthy with that love. Not in front of the siblings. I don't have to deny it, that's real. In my relationship with that child, he can feel, and let him feel, the full force, unrestrained appreciation and affinity and love, but not in front of the other children. I have one rabbi, Rabbi Talba in Los Angeles, based in there, very special man. I spent a Shabbos in his home once. Every one of his children said the same answer to this question. Which one of you is favored by dad? And every sibling said, daddy loves me the most. And they know that the other siblings feel the same way. That is genius. Now that means that a person is saying, I love you. And when we say, I love you because, and attach what it is that I do love about you, the qualities in your character, your responsibility, or your appreciation, your gratitude, your sensitivity, your capacity to listen, or your capacity to get the best PhD in existence, a PhD in apology. Very, very important subject. Admitting I'm wrong, to get a PhD in apology, is a great accomplishment. For someone to acquire that in noticing where I'm going wrong and being able to admit it and then working on trying to change, that's someone we can work with. For a parent or a spouse to share with that child or with that spouse, I love you because, and say specifically what it is about them that we love, is what cultivates and quantifies for the other person, whether it's a child or whether it's a spouse or whether it's in a relationship, I now know why they love or appreciate me. At this point, I want to legitimize jealousy as natural. In fact, in a certain sense, the very need for God, if I can put it this way, to put in the Ten Commandments, as any one of the commandments really, the actual instruction, don't be jealous, must assume that we're going to be jealous. In fact, if I have no jealousy, I wouldn't have no accountability and I would not be able to fulfill this mitzvah. So there's an acceptance on God's part that jealousy is natural to a human being. It's so natural that, I think it's in last week's parasha, in chapter 6 of Genesis, God actually declares that a human being is essentially negative from childhood. Think about it. The selfishness and total self-centeredness by default of a child continues for many years. And even as they're saying please and thank you at the age of 2 or 3, it's only in training. But all their needs, they're not self-sufficient and they're not self-disciplined. It's all on the parents to give and give and give. We know, of course, that the purpose of the giving is to help them to become independent. I could give and 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 carry on giving to the point that you become totally dependent. But we know that the real purpose of raising a Jewish child is so they become self-sufficient, which is usually around about 18, 20, sorry for being so honest. Self-sufficiency, self-discipline, self-control is the real goal of the giving in a relationship, in parenting. So God's intent in planting this leaning in us is for tikkun hamidot, to rectify my own self, to correct myself, to be in control of my thoughts and the desire that would be the result of that thought. Let me now share with you the two levels of jealousy that exist. There's positive and negative. The negative power of jealousy, our sages tell us, is self-destruction. Literally, self-destruction. The description in Hebrew, taken right out of the famous Pirkei Avot, Ethics of Our Fathers, chapter 4, I think it's Mishnah number 21. The words are that kina, jealousy, v'tava, desire, v'kavod, the need for other people's respect, motzi'in et adam min ha'olam, takes a person out of this world. I can be so consumed by my need for you to recognize me and admire me. I could be so consumed by my need to have what you have that as long as I don't reach that goal, it eats me up. But why is it so self-destructive? Because it has no end. Even if I get the car you've got, what are you going to do when you sell your car? You're probably going to get a better model. So I'm still left chasing. And if I give up on chasing you, and I don't control my jealousy, I will probably notice someone else with something more than I have. So unbridled kina, unbridled jealousy, leads to motzi'in et ha'adam min ha'olam. It takes a person out of this world. I'm not here. I'm consumed totally in myself. I'm not part of reality. I take myself out of sanity, out of reality. There's a verse in the words of King Solomon. I don't see it coming up right here. There's a verse in King Solomon to the effect that jealousy actually disintegrates my bones. My bones deteriorate from jealousy. The word in Hebrew for bone is etzem. Etzem also refers to the essence of a person. That I allow that my soul is ignored and my thoughts, emotions, speech and actions become consumed by what exists outside of me and my need to have it. As opposed to capitalizing on the power that exists within my own free will in the circumstances that I'm already in, and the ability that I have to put myself first, and I mean first, in order to be there first for you, whether you're my spouse or my child, whether you're my parent or my sister, sibling, or extended family or friend, if I really want to be there for you, I need to be there for me. That's the deeper meaning in Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, loving others as oneself. Because if we take the words literally, as the entire world has in quoting this great command, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, what happens if I hate myself? How much do I have to love you? What happens if I'm suicidal? How much do I have to love you now? Love you as much as I love myself. So it's so clear that the Torah does not mean it literally. It's obviously pointing fingers for me to love me first. Appreciate what I have first. Appreciate what I have in me first. Because if I'm not appreciating my qualities, and I'm the most obvious first choice of who to take care of, who to maintain, who to be concerned for, if I'm not taking care of me, whether it's on a health level, being in control of emotions level, whether it's growing on a personal growth level, whether it's spiritually growing in our relationship with God, His Torah and His mitzvahs, if I'm not taking care of me, why would I expect myself to be able to take care of someone outside of me who I surely wouldn't care more for, naturally speaking, and therefore taking care of me first, not in a selfish way, but as a preparation for being able to take care of a spouse, children, grandchildren, co-workers, dealing with a difficult boss, difficult client. It all starts with, what's the metal strength that I'm made of? That's why the Jewish people were compared to an olive. Because when an olive is squeezed, what comes out? I know it's olive oil, but what determines the quality of the oil? The maturity of the
Aleph. So whatever level of maturity is in me is what's going to determine what comes out when I'm squeezed. If I'm in a difficult relationship, what's going to come out? Whatever's inside. My capacity to hold out, or my capacity to give, or my capacity to forgive, my capacity to love, or my capacity to appreciate, or my capacity to say, it's gone too far, I have to move on. Whatever it is that's coming from strength, that's what's squeezed out when we are under pressure. The positive aspect of jealousy is that we can use it to be motivated and propelled. The statement that's given in Bava Basra, the tractate in the Talmud, called Bava Basra, page 21a, Kinat Sofrim, the jealousy amongst scholars, Tarabe Chokhmah, increases wisdom. A person sees that this person next to him is putting more effort in his studies, and he says, you know what, I'm going to get up early, I'm going to stay up late. This person sees, you know what, they've worked carefully to control their tongue. And you know something? I respect them so much for it, because I trust that if I were to open up to them, and they don't tell me about others, or they don't tell me their names at least, then I feel safe to open up to them. I want to be like that. When we come across role models of taking care of themselves, whether it's their wisdom, whether it's control of their mouths, whether it's control of their diet, or whether it's control of their body and exercise and taking care of their health. When we meet someone who is loving and forgiving and appreciative, that becomes for us, I am jealous. That's positive. I want that for me. Not because I want to take it away from you, and not because I want you to have less of it. That's what I want to work for. So jealousy has the positive aspect, and which of the two I go for, whether it's the negative jealousy, that I eat myself up, that you have that and I don't, or whether I decide by power of my free will choice to say, I'm going to shoot for that. I'm going to put in the extra time. I'm going to get up a few extra minutes early and put in the prayers. I want to daven with the devotion that my friend davens when he prays in the morning. I want to be as loving as that man's wife is. I want to be as devoted as that husband is. That becomes a positive motivator, and jealousy is positive. It can work for us and it can propel us. There's actually a very high level of jealousy. It's called kinna, but it's not the jealousy that we're referring to tonight, and that's the jealousy that was reserved for very few individuals described in scripture. One of them was Pinchas, that his love for God was so strong that he was able to be detached from any emotional or personal attachment to someone else's violation, and for God's sake alone, literally for heaven's sake alone, would act upon, take spontaneous action for God's protection because of his love for God. But we have to be very, very careful that when we go on a jihad, that it's not that it's not mixed with other motives, because if there's the slightest taint of hatred, then every negative thing we do has incredible repercussions, and we are accountable for that. But if it's absolutely pure, which is very, very unusual, and that's why I say we're not talking about that level of jealousy tonight, a jealousy for God on the level that if I see someone violate God's will and I act accordingly to correct that person, and it's not tainted by anything that has to do with being better than thou or being upset with you personally, that's a very high level. We're not discussing that, but just to mention for the sake of knowing that there is such a concept of jealousy on that level. Eliyahu Anavi, Elijah the prophet, was, some actually claim, was a Gilgal, a recycled soul of Pinchas, wrote a book. It's called Tana Debei Eliyahu. Very, very, very important book. It's not learned that much in yeshivas, and one of my rebbes encouraged me, used to tell me, you have to read two lines every night. It was the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva. His name was Rabbi Segel in Manchester. A very special book. It arouses tremendous feelings for love of the Jewish people and for wanting to do mitzvahs. And in chapter 25, he has the following line, which is well quoted. Chayev Adam Loimar. A person has an absolute obligation to say, Matai, when yagiyu ma'asai. When will my behavior, when will my actions, actions are the result of thoughts, when will my actions yagiyu lema'asai Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Vilea? When will my behavior shoot for the level of actions of our forefathers and our patriarchs, our matriarchs? An example given, a well-known example, very powerful. Genesis chapter 30, verse 1. In describing Rachel and Leah, in this chapter you see a race. That's what it looks like. It looks like a race for how many kids Leah can produce and how many kids Rachel can produce. And the words there in chapter 30, verse 1 are, V'tikane Rachel be'achota. Rachel was jealous of her sister. This is how the Torah, God's words, is describing our matriarch, jealousy. But we need the oral transmission, the Medrash, to extrapolate and tell us, what does it mean, jealous? We learned there's two sides to jealousy, the negative and positive. Which was she jealous of? So says the Medrash Rabbah, Simbracious Rabbah, in section 71, paragraph 6. Shikana b'maaseya hatovim. She was jealous of her good behavior. She was jealous of her good deeds. She was jealous of her mitzvahs. Her jealousy of her sister's superior prayer, superior level of devotion, in whatever level it was, whether it was with kids or with other people, made her feel motivated to want to be like that and more. Continues the Tana de Be'eliyahu, this book by Elijah the prophet. She said to herself, how did Rachel speak to herself when she dealt with this jealousy? Her eyes saw that her sister was giving birth to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 children. And she had none. She was barren. How did she explain that to herself? How did she deal with the jealousy? And she said to herself, and these are the words, Ilu loy haita tova mimeni, if it wasn't for the fact that my sister is better than me, loy zachta lehit banot, she wouldn't have been worthy of having so many children before me. And what was she referring to specifically? And this is very interesting. We're told by the Torah that Rachel was of exceptionally beautiful appearance, and Leah was not. In fact, Leah's face was stained with rashes. She had rashes on her face from years of tears staining her cheeks. And where did the tears come from? She consistently prayed, please God, I beg of you. Everyone's talking about this shidduch. Oh my gosh, Esav, no, please God, don't, I beg of you, don't let me fall into the lap of Esav. And she prayed, let me be married to Jacob. From the reputation that all the Shadchanim were saying about this Esav, she didn't want anything to do with him. And she prayed to God, and she changed who she was destined to marry through the power of prayer. It cost her her face, it cost her her cheeks, but it was worth the price in her mind. And Rachel was jealous of the power of prayer, the devotion, and the relationship that that created. Because Leah not only stopped when she got what she asked for through her prayer, she said, wait a minute, if it works for getting married, it probably works for children too. And Rachel learned that desperation is sometimes the positive motivator in personal growth. And it's not the circumstances, it's the choice of how we respond to the circumstances which decides who we become. It's not how good my spouse is, it's not how many years barren, and it's not how hard the marriage or how difficult is dating, and it's not how hard the boss or my career or my intelligence or how much I've grown. It's how I decide today, tomorrow, the next day, incrementally, to work on my diet, my health, perhaps eat a little bit less than I usually do, or cut out the pizzas or a little bit less caffeine, or to go on an exercise program or put in 5 minutes a day, maybe a month from now another 5 minutes. Is it possible that those small changes, only one of those, could make a big difference in my health 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the line? Is it possible that looking for what's good in me and forgiving me for my mistakes and for loving me, that if God still wants me here, that means He hasn't given up on me, so how could I give up on me? Moed Ani, the first two words that Jew says every morning, Moed Ani, is a description of who we really are. We are admitters. Moed Ani, we are thank you-ers. We are people that are here to be appreciative of what we do have inside ourselves. And that becomes the beginning of the spillover. That when we love ourselves for taking care of our body, even if I'm not where I want to be, but I'm getting there, even if it goes up and down many times, but I'm not going to give up. And I put in a little bit of extra effort to spend less than I earn, so that I can actually have a retirement account and not bust my tail my entire life. Is it possible that putting aside a few dollars a day could equal a retirement account that will substantially support my standard of living? Is it possible that a few compliments a day to my spouse, my child, one or two, or even a gracious smile, or an extra mile of forgiveness for something that I typically get upset for, could be the beginning of turning that relationship around? Is it possible that for, in a small way, a change in relationships, in my career, in learning a little bit extra today, praying a little bit extra tomorrow, making a list of the people that I care about, and asking God once a week on a Friday before candle lighting, or Shabbos morning in prayers in shul, or during the week in shul, I put aside an extra few moments at the end of my Shemoneh Esrei, my standing prayer, and I say, God, please help this person, help me. Help me to help that person, help my spouse, help my child, help my cousin. And specify whether it's a shidduch, whether it's health, whether it's finances, or whether it's simply their emotional growth, or their personal growth, their spiritual growth. So Rachel saw in her sister what it was that she said, that's why my sister is getting ahead, and that's why I'm jealous. And it made her want it more, and pray more, and work harder for it. So we're told, jealousy has the positive side to it that will work for us. We could have chosen negative jealousy. Rachel could have been angry, resentful, and bitter. But she became that weeping mother of the entire Jewish people that was there even in exile. And until today, pretty much, that Jews know that one of the first addresses to go to in Israel, as long as it's safe, is Kever Rachel, the tomb of Rachel. She prayed and cried tears for her children, and even in exile, we go to her grave and ask that on behalf of the Jewish people, she pray for us. I want to share with you in closing the following. The Talmud in Yuma, page 38b, says, "Ein malchut negat bechaverta." No kingdom can trespass the border of another kingdom. Afilu kemalei nima, even as much as the width of a hairbreadth. That God calculates exactly the borders between one country and another. God calculates exactly who we need in our lives, and God calculates exactly the possessions we have in our lives. Kol mezoinos shel adam ketzuvim lo. All our food, our panos, our livelihood, has been designated Rosh Hashanah ad Yom Kippur. Every year, from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, that 10-day period is the trial period where, based on not just behavior, but the capacity we demonstrate for giving, that is what decides how much God says, you know what, this person needs so much in order for him to be able to give to himself and others. That's from the Talmud in Beitza, page 16. Again and again we see that the bottom line is that outside of us, God controls with a perfect calculation exactly what has to exist in each person's life. And jealousy is a misrepresentation of truth, a misrepresentation of reality. That if I think for a moment that if I would have a car like yours, or worse still, if I would have your car and you would lose it, or if I would have your wife and you would lose her, or if I were to have your possessions or the equivalent of, or if I would have your figure or your looks, whenever I even fall for a moment into that trap, I have lost reality. Because the reality is that if I were to have that other person's possessions, degrees, career, popularity, it would possibly corrupt me or be my ruin. Or because based on the variables that exist in my character, perhaps I would destroy myself or others around me. It's not what's needed for my personal tikkun, my personal rectification, my personal growth, my emotional strength. I need what's already in my life. That's why we remind ourselves every morning, Shasali Kol Sarki. God, you've provided me all my needs. And I'm referring to my wife, my husband, my children, the dates I've been on and the dates I haven't yet been on, extended members of the family and the career, and all the experiences of my past have been needed to bring me to where I am now. And if I think that there's something that's not here that I need to bring me to where I believe I've got to move to, for my personal strength, physical strength and my health, finances, career, personal growth and relationships, I may be losing out on not capitalizing on what's already inside me. The power to be jealous positively and say, I love that, I want that, because that's what I need to make myself stronger so that I have that health, that I can enjoy that relationship and find out how come they seem to have a great relationship. And watch closely or ask deeply and then see, how can I do that for myself? How can I do that for my spouse? Oh, this is what you went through with your spouse? That's the forgiveness? That's the differences that you eventually managed to work together through? And then I reference that to me and ask myself, can I learn from that? Using jealousy positively is what can move me ahead. I'll end off on the following strategies that are given to us by our sages to work with jealousy. Number one, the Chazon Ish tells us, very interesting, and we would not have expected to see this, and I would not have thought of it myself. But I guess that's why I'm not the Chazon Ish. Pray for the person you are jealous of. Pray for their success. Because the power of prayer is a demonstration of what I really want. What I really want is, I don't want what you've got. In the sense that you have to lose it, or I've got to have what you have. I want what you've got because I've got to earn it myself. And if I see you have it and it's good for you, and that references to me as it would probably be good for me too, whether it's because I love your lifestyle or love the way you relate to people or your popularity, whatever it is, your career, and I say that's what I want, if I feel, you know what? I wish they didn't have that, and I notice it's jealousy, pray for their success. Because praying for the other person's health, praying for the other person's success, will help that God will say, you know what? I deserve help from heaven to overcome this jealousy. Pray for their health, wealth, and happiness. Number two, and this is also very powerful, please God, 1-800-ALMIGHTY, please God, please help me conquer my jealousy. Now this is a dangerous prayer to make, because one has to know that when I ask for something, what I'm really asking for is a test. Think about it. If I say, God, please give me patience, what's the only way he can give it to me? Well, he could either gift it to me and suddenly I don't get fazed by your anger, and I'll just listen and understand, and I will not be upset with you, ever. Right? Well, I didn't really employ any effort in that, so how much am I going to be rewarded? I'm not talking about upstairs, I'm talking about self-fulfilling. I didn't really work on it. So what does God do when Rieti says, please God, I beg of you, not. When that person walks in, gets me so irritable, especially when she talks about my mom like that. Please, I beg you, give me patience. And 2 seconds later, guess who walks in and starts talking about my mom? God, I said, give me patience. And God says, Rieti, you fool. I'm giving you exercises in patience. The only way I'm ever going to get patience is exercise. And therefore, God is going to send me all the things that I'm asking for. I want to conquer my jealousy. Guess what's going to be slapped in my face? All the things, people, that I'm jealous of. So that I get the chance to change my choice of response. To notice, that's what my eyes are reporting. I won't believe the report. I'm going to change what my brain says back to that report. And I'm going to say, if it's positive, that jealousy, I'm going to work for it. If what I'm looking at is negative, it's fame for the sake of cover, for the sake of recognition, I don't need it. But if it's recognition for the sake of perhaps influence, maybe. Or if it's popularity, because I feel that I'm lonely in my life, maybe. Or maybe I need to realize that's really not what I need. I need deep relationships, even if it's only one. At least with myself. So that I'm not completely alone. And number three, the Pele Yoetz tells us that if I have a negative jealousy, I should learn to say to myself, that item does not exist for me. It's out of the realm of possibility. And by repeating that to myself, that person's lifestyle, possessions or house, or whatever it is that I'm jealous of, is out of the realm of possibility in the sense that it belongs to them, not me. That's their portion. That's not what God has granted me. That's another way to help me to overcome jealousy. And lastly, I will leave off, and this is the root of it all, that if I don't plug into trust, that really God has calculated your portion and mine. If I don't learn to trust God's calculation, if I don't learn to credit God with the intelligence of knowing exactly why someone else has the looks they have, my sister, for example, or my brother, or whoever it is that I feel jealousy for, or whether it's their money, or whether it's their lifestyle, whether it's the relationships I think they have better than mine, whatever it is, I have to learn to trust that what I have is what I've got to work on and capitalize on, not think about what someone else has, because that's taking me out of my sanity, out of reality, and I'm losing trust that God really is in the equation. Some of you know this little story, but I'll share it with you anyway. There was once a man who was walking along a cliff edge, and he wasn't looking carefully enough. And he slipped, but he managed to grab onto the tip of the rock, and he's hanging there, and his weight is pulling him down. In fact, he can't even get his second hand up there, and he's screaming, help! Sorry, I meant we can wake you up. Help! And no one's there. No one's asking, please help! How long is he going to have it? Finally, the heavens open up, and a hand reaches down. He says, God, God, please, anything, help me, please. And God says, I'll help you, but you got to agree to. Anything, God, anything, please, anything. Okay, anything, anything, just what, anything you want. I'll believe in you, whatever you want. Trust in me. Oh, trust me, I trust implicitly in you. Wonderful, you trust me. I trust you, God, what do you want? Let go. Is there anyone else up there? God wants me to trust him in letting go of any thoughts that were coming from what my eyes told me that are lies. The lies that you are better than me because you have more. Whether it's looks, whether it's the clothes, whether it's the figure, whether it's the image, whether it's the popularity, whether it's the recognition, whether it's your health, or whether it's your finances, or your corporate position, or your family, or your relationships. I think we've pretty much covered it all. Whatever it is that I have believed, my thoughts tell me that someone else has and I don't, God says, let go. Trust me. I already have what I need. And if I look inside of myself and utilize the power of choice to take control and conquer whatever the weaknesses are in me, I will become stronger. And in becoming stronger, I'll have more capacity to give from myself, those closest to me. And God can sign a bigger check, whether it's health or finances, whether it's happiness or emotional strength or spiritual strength. He can sign the bigger check because I've grown, and therefore my sphere of influence also grows. And God says, I need to give you a bigger stipend in order to give for yourself and others. And that is the bottom line. Trusting by letting go. Thank you for your patience.
Yes,